party. It's time to change. You're just getting started. You can teach an old dog new ways, and not just on Saturdays.
Hey, this is Anna David with the After Party
podcast about addiction and recovery.
Welcome if you're new. Welcome back if you're old. I am recording a flurry of episodes, which I will be releasing over the next however long. You know, every time I go, I think I've run out of alcoholics and addicts who are sober who want to come on this podcast. 64 appear in front of me, and I just take out my recorder and we just talk and talk and talk. Anyway, After Party Pod is a part of After Party Magazine, which is a part of RehabReviews.com, the world's largest source for rehab reviews. They're really more write-ups than reviews, but if you're looking for treatment, this is where you go, over 4,000 reviews. If you're looking for stories, news stories and essays about addiction recovery, go to After Party Magazine. We also have a video series that's kind of funny called After Party Answers, where I answer questions with Danielle Stewart, who works for After Party, and we do a storytelling show the third Friday of every month in Los Angeles. If you want to know about these things and more, sign up for the newsletter. Just go to afterpartynewsletter.com. You will be sent an ebook for free, a $1.99 ebook about how 10 alcoholics got sober. How I got sober. 10 alcoholics tell their stories. I think that's the title. I also have another podcast. It's called You've Got Issues. You can find out about that by going to issueswithanna.com. Go check it out. Now let's get into today's guest. She's hilarious. She just left my office. I have joy surging through my veins because she was so fun to talk to. Found out about her from Mary Patterson. Mary Patterson Broom, which you know her byline from After Party Magazine because you are a faithful reader. She's a comedian. And she does the storytelling show. Anyway, MP did a show with Deborah and told me, Deborah D. Giovanni, she's Canadian. She's been awarded the Canadian Comedy Award for Best Female Comic for the third time in 5 years, people. I don't know who those people are that won those other two times. She's been called the best comedian to see after a messy breakup. She's been named Toronto's favorite comedian. She lives in LA now. She's been all over. She's a favorite at the Montreal Just for Laughs Comedy Festival. Did I mention she was on Last Comic Standing, making it to the top 8? Well, Deborah is also an alcoholic addict. She's been off alcohol for a long time, quit pot in January, fresh off the pot. We talked about that. We talked about switching addictions. We talked about food addiction. We talked about it all. We talked about dreams. Yeah. We talked about so much. Here I'm going to give you Deborah D. Giovanni.
I first started taking drugs by chewing blocks of hash.
Oh my God. I think my copy has like blood stains on it from shooting up while reading it.
Party animal. I hate to say that because that makes me sound Paris Hilton-y. I was on the, as I call it, the Autobahn to nowhere.
I'm very lucky because would you have wanted to have a celebrity junkie for a dad?
To see a movie that you know nothing about.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're going. You're like okay. The movie I know nothing about.
Oh,
so if you were a trailer,
oh,
what would be shown? If it was like a tragic comedy,
that would be what would start very dark, bleak.
Yes.
You know, an empty room.
So tell me, no. So like, where are you from? Tell me about the situation.
Canadian. I'm from Toronto, and that's, you can tell I'm Canadian because I say Toronto. I don't say Toronto.
Yes.
The minute you hear the two T's, you know they're not Canadian.
That's like, I'm from the Bay Area. When people say San Fran, it's like, oh, you're not from
you're
there.
So not
or Frisco.
Over,
you're definitely not from there.
Yeah. I'm today is actually Canada Day.
I heard you say that.
Yeah, it's our birthday today, so there you go.
Canadians, are you one of those Canadians that always talks about who the famous Canadians are?
No, but I feel like a ridiculous amount of pride when anyone from Canada makes it.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, oh God, good for you. You feel like you're related to everybody because it's hard, you know? It's
harder for a Canadian?
It really is.
Is it hard out there for a pimp and a Canadian?
It is. But it's like, you know, we're a gigantic country, but we're empty. Like, we're only half full, right?
So right.
It's just that we have a lot of, you know, mass, but there's not many of us. So breaking out on, like, an international scale is... It's just, it's everyone, if you take such pride in everybody, like Drake, Drake's mine.
Right.
You're like, yeah, that's, I take,
he's,
yeah,
he's your brother.
That's ours, exactly.
See, okay, I have a different perspective. Okay, say, for instance, there are these, like, addiction and recovery sort of, not websites, but groups. Like, I know ones in Canada that have broken out in crazy ways, and I feel like that's because they get all the Canadians to kind of, you know, whereas, like, here, there's, like, 60,000 of us doing it. Yeah. And so we don't have the camaraderie and the support.
Well, that's it, too, as well. I think so, because there are less of us. It's sort of like you bond quicker.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's just less people.
Yeah.
It's like going to high school with only 30 people in your class rather than, like, you know, 700, you know, it's just,
yeah,
just know each other more.
Did you go to a bigger, small high school?
Yeah, that's actually what happened.
You went to 30 people?
Yeah, no, like, our high school, gosh, I mean, I grew up in a small town in, not in Toronto, like, uh-huh, south of Toronto, and there was, my whole high school was 300 people. Like, my graduating class was honestly 27 people. So,
right. Yeah. So did you start drinking and everything in high school?
Oh, God, yeah. It was one of those towns, I mean, I think... I don't have any proof of this, but I think there's something about a small town that people drink very young. I mean, I got drunk on my 14th birthday. Like, that was...
Okay, by the way, I don't think that's that young.
Not anymore. When at that time, it was young. It was terrifying. But 14, you know, at the time, like, this was the 80s.
Yeah.
So it was young, but now I know kids are, like, 11 and stuff, and that's terrifying. But it was very normal. Like, it was not, like, the bad kids. It was just sort of part of life there. Nothing to do has a tendency to lend to, you know, a lot of drinking, right?
I mean, I wonder about that because I was not from a small town, and there were, and, like, we were drinking at 12 and stuff like that. But I think that it sort of is like, if you're gonna drink, you kind of find it. Whether you're in a small town, a big city,
I think so too. Because, I mean, there were definitely people that stayed sober the entirety of high school. You know what I mean? That's exactly it. I think so too. I think if you're going to be one of the drinkers, you're gonna start pretty early.
Yeah. So you start drinking, and did you love it from the beginning?
Yeah. You know, one of my older sister was a partier, and she was cool, and so that was kind of just like, just. Yeah, was just like, yeah, like her. You know, she was cool. And,
do you only have one sibling?
No, I've got a bunch. I've got a twin sister.
Oh.
I know. And two older sisters, little brother.
Big. Oh my God.
There's the gang of us, a troop.
That's so many.
I know, it's a lot, Italian. But yeah, I did like drinking a lot. Like, but you know, like at that time, like we drank, like, you know, fizzy wine, and you know what I mean? Like, it was very, you know,
like
coolers.
Right, and, right.
There was no booze until later, until college, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Even saying the word cooler makes me feel kind of sick.
I know, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It gives you that gag reflex.
It's so gross.
So sweet and awful. I do remember going through a peach schnapps phase.
Oh, I had a huge peach schnapps phase. Did you ever have Bellinis?
Oh, yeah.
That was like a huge part of my drinking.
Delish.
I remember getting
such, like, one time, like, not having anything to mix with the peach schnapps.
Yeah, but that was okay.
Oh, it was okay.
Yeah.
And then getting heartburn, like, nothing I've experienced in my life. And thinking, I'm dying. Drinking schnapps straight. That will get you.
You know what's funny? That just unearthed a memory that I have not thought of in so long. Okay. When I was in college, there was the bar, you know, that everybody went to.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be, I was, this is like, I'm so sorry for this aside. It's not that interesting. It's just that it just came to me. Okay. So you have to listen, as do the listeners. I apologize. Okay. So I wanted to get a job waitressing on Martha's Vineyard, where I was going for the summer, but I had no experience. So the, like, kind of lechy guy that ran the bar right near school, my roommate and I went to him and we said, we have no waitressing experience, but we want to get waitressing jobs. Can we work for you for one night? And you give us a recommendation.
Oh.
And he's like, okay. And so he paid us in schnapps.
Okay.
And I drank this, it wasn't even peach. It was raspberry.
Oh, yeah. The peppermint and all those.
Maybe it was peppermint.
Yeah. Terrible.
So,
terrible.
Okay. So, anyway, drinking. You go to college.
Yeah.
And then what happened?
I remember, like, I remember at the time, too, my high school boyfriend, my nickname was Tank because I could drink so much. Mm-hmm. Like, I could really drink. I could put it away. So that didn't, it's, I don't think it got worse in college. I think it just, like, I mean, we drank a lot in high school. And so I don't think it increased the amount we drank. I just think it's like, you know, the casual. It just became much more, we didn't have to sneak, you know, there was no hiding the drinking. Then it just became, you know, and then it was sort of like, you know, going out to drink and that rather than like, you know, drinking in someone's basement. So that was it. Because, you know, the drinking age in Canada is 19, right? Mm-hmm. So by the time we're in college, we're all legal to drink.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that makes a big difference, right? Like that's.
Yeah.
Or does it?
I don't know. You're like making all these excuses. I'm kidding. No, you're like small town. Young drinking age. I'm a victim of my circumstances.
Exactly. None of this is my fault.
Yeah.
None of this is
my fault. I don't know. I mean, no. I had a really good fake ID.
Yeah. Oh,
did
yeah.
you never have one of those?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, yeah, definitely, yeah. Definitely. About 17, I think I got
Did you get ID. Your sister's or did you have a fake ID?
Yeah, I had my older sister who we look quite similar looking, mm-hmm. so that was easy. Although, you know, again, there was, you just went to a liquor store out of town. And there was no problem. Because you know how, this is, the boys may not know this, sorry boys, but girls at age 14, you can look 18 with no problem at all, you know?
See, so, well, okay, that's where the 19 thing helps, because it was not easy for me.
You can't pull 21 off at 15, you just can't.
No.
But 19 you can do, so we would just go like
and they wouldn't card you?
But these were like little tiny mom and pop.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just went in, God, with some lipstick on and just confidently bought a bottle of whatever and nothing. No one ever questioned it. So.
See, we would have to resort to shoulder tapping. Is that something that we did other people call it that?
I don't know.
Shoulder tapping. You would go up to an adult. Can you imagine being that adult? That's like buying 13-year-olds. Never happened to me. Never.
Never.
Yeah.
But we used to just hang out in a parking lot somewhere.
And people would always say yes.
Mm-hmm. Never, because we would just tip them, right?
I don't even think we did. Yeah, I just think they were like happy to contribute to the delinquent of minors. Weird? I know.
I wouldn't even know what to. I would say no, but
I would feel uncool.
So annoying.
Yeah,
but I would apologize. I'd be like, I'm sorry, I can't do that.
Yeah. I know, it's weird.
I know.
Funny. So okay, and so then you graduated from college.
Yeah.
And then what happened?
It was just really for me, quitting drinking was. It wasn't even that, like, my life was becoming unmanageable. It was honestly, like, I think my body saved me. And I started to get really sick whenever mm-hmm. I would drink. And that never happened to me before. I had, mm-hmm. you know, I had 10, 12 years of drinking. And it never, you know, I have hangover, you know, maybe sometimes throw up. But it turned on me. Mm-hmm. It really did. Probably mm-hmm. about the time I was about 27.
Mm-hmm.
It just... Like, I couldn't have a sip without getting a blinding headache.
Mm-hmm.
And then being like, okay, I have to go lie down in a dark room. And I would get so violently ill that I mean, don't get me wrong. It took me a while to clue in and say enough is enough.
Right.
But yeah, it was honestly, and I think that's, fortunately for me, that's what saved me, you know, mm-hmm. that I'm one of those, and I know that people fight through it. I mean, God, I had a boyfriend who was sick every time he drank, and it didn't never bothered him. He just kept going.
Yeah.
But for me, that was just like, no, I couldn't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. I physically couldn't do it anymore. So by the time I was about 30, I was completely sober.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So by about 27, and you know, I even went to my family doctor and was like, what's going on? And he said, look at, anyone can become allergic to anything at any time in their life. Like, don't kid yourself like that.
Yeah.
And he's like, I think you might have developed an allergy to alcohol. Okay. And, you know, then I did all the trying. I'll try wine and then I'll try, you know, I'll just drink champagne or I'll just do, you know, I tried everything. Beer will be fine. And mm-hmm. every single alcohol just made me wretchedly ill. So
you think it literally is an allergy that you
have? I don't know, to be honest. I don't know. Like, I don't, in the last like 15 years, I've probably had maybe 4 glasses of wine.
Mm-hmm.
And each time, like, it's just been, I haven't been ill, but just there's something in me now that just goes, nope. Like, I'm so confident that I will, honestly, like, I know that this is, I don't mean to, you know, push it, but it's just really like, I just know I'm never going to drink again. Like, everything in my body just says, nope, no.
Right.
And I can't.
Did you, but it's alcoholism, you think?
Yeah. I think it's, I don't, I would say, to be honest mm-hmm. with you, I would say that I had a more problem with drugs than mm-hmm. I did with alcohol.
Me too.
Yeah, really? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for me, it was just, I mean, this is new as well for me because this was the thing. So alcohol started to disagree with me early 20s, and no, mid-20s, but by that time, I started smoking pot, mm-hmm. and I had a boyfriend that was a big pothead, and so that was fine. And then when alcohol started to go, oh, not so great, I really picked up on the drugs, mm-hmm. and then it became, you know, God, at that time, kids, we did acid, mm-hmm. and we did mushrooms, mm-hmm. and but that was like, I was doing acid, like, acid, how bad, look, even the name of it, I mean, it's just how bad it is for your brain and your body, and we were doing it every week, like, it was just every
how many
week.
Times do you think you've done it?
Oh,
like 60?
Yeah, 100 probably. 100, yeah. Maybe 120. I know.
I've never done it. I have no interest.
And you know what? It's one of those ones. I couldn't do a chemical again. Like, it's again, it's like, it gags me. Mm-hmm. Like, now it's just like, ugh, like, it's just like, okay, honestly, like the smell of cocaine, I'll be ill. I'll be ill.
Have you ever heard that joke? I hated cocaine. I just liked the way it smelled.
No, it's kind of funny. Not me. Like, do you now ever have that really thing Ill.
Where things smell like cocaine?
Oh, yeah.
And what are those
it's,
things?
It's like, you know, it's making me almost gag a little bit. It's got a metallic.
A metallic smell.
That it's like, I don't know if it's lead or something, but there's a metallic smell. And you can, you know, when you smell something, you can instantly taste it.
Yes.
That's what coke is. That's
remember when I first started doing coke that my laundry room in my apartment building smelled like it.
Trigger you.
And it would set off this phenomenon of craving. So you were kind of equal opportunity. You were like cocaine, acid, absolutely. Whatever, pot.
But then it really became pot. Then in my 30s, because by the time I quit drinking, I'd stopped. The chemicals had kind of worn off. Mm-hmm. Like I eased off of that because I had my last serious relationship. He was a mess. Mm-hmm. And I think that sort of, it grossed me out a bit. Like mm-hmm. just him. Like mm-hmm. and how, like, you know, you've had one of those moments where you wake up and you go, oh my God. Like you have that mm-hmm. moment of like looking down at yourself and going, oh my God, what have we done here?
Yes.
We were just two addicts that were just feeding each other. Yeah. Like it was, oh God, never should have been together. But then we stayed together, you know, for 5 years.
Right.
By the time I was 31, it was done. And we just, but that time we were just shells of who we were. And so by about 30, I had stopped drinking. And then that sort of was going to be the demise of our relationship because he was a very heavy drinker. Mm-hmm. And then, but by that time, I mean, by the time I was 30, I was a chronic pot smoker. Mm-hmm. Like, it just, like, the cocktail going on in my body mm-hmm. of the stuff that I put in it was, I don't know how I'm alive, mm-hmm. you know? Just the, like, I don't think I was ever the kind of, okay, like, when I quit smoking pot, I had a friend ask me, and she was just like, you know, like, what, like, how often were you high? And she was like, we would go for brunch, I'd be like, yeah, then. Mm-hmm. So then then. She's like, really? It was like, all the time. I functioned high. Like that was just it. Like I would get up in the morning, I would smoke a joint. Like that's just, there were less hours in my day sober than there were high ever.
And you did it by yourself?
Yeah. That was like, honestly, by the time, so 31 single. And by this time I was well into comedy. Mm-hmm. I started comedy when I was 27. Mm-hmm. So by this time, and especially around 32, excuse me, I was successful enough in comedy that I didn't have to have a day job, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. Like, so I didn't have to go to an office or anything. Woo. And then that was just left to your own devices. Yep. And like, just, you know, doing enough to get by mm-hmm. and, you know, really only working for like 2 hours a day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and so you would get high and like, what would you do?
You know, like, God.
Like watch cartoons?
It changed over the years. Mm-hmm. At the beginning, it was much more social. Mm-hmm. At the beginning, it was, I mean, don't get me wrong, I would still get up and smoke mm-hmm. in the morning and start my day high. But that would be more like, you know, we would go to movies, we would go to concerts, we'd go to the park, we'd hang out. Mm-hmm. And then by the time, like, late 30s, then I started realizing that I don't do anything anymore. Mm-hmm. I became reclusive mm-hmm. and it just became, just me mm-hmm. and, you know, saying no to things because I want to stay home and get high mm-hmm. and or going home after things because I want to go home and get high. And yeah, so it really changed from that like social, like going out with people and getting high and laughing and having fun and what. Yeah, it really turned. And that was when I was just like, oh, okay, yeah, we need to, this is, I need to stop. And then moving here, I gotta tell you, this is the real I'm very thankful for it because it was just, I mean, in Canada, pot is, it's still illegal, but it's barely illegal.
Do you know what I mean? Like it's like that here.
Yeah. Oh, here, that's the
thing. And it might change and become legal soon.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah. Oy. To vote in November, I think. God,
yeah. So that's the thing. So like in Canada, it's always been very lax. Like it was like, I remember, you know, being like out with friends, actually, you know, it's Pride in Toronto this weekend. And I remember being at Pride parades and like, you know, smoking joints and cops would walk by and you'd put the joint down and they'd go, hi everybody. We smell pot. Do you smell pot? We'd be like, no officer. And they'd be like, okay, have a good day.
Right.
And they would just, and that was it. And that was as scary as it got, you know? So it was very easy. But then moving here, it was just the getting the medical marijuana card and then being able to go. I mean, because this was how it always was for me, was just like, here's your marijuana. They'd show up and go, here you go. And then hand you a bag. But then going to the dispensaries and being like choosing and smelling. I mean, it was.
It was
a playground. It was just.
Yeah.
So
you just got your medical marijuana card and went right crazy.
Immediately.
And, okay, and so when did you stop?
I only quit smoking pot this January.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I'm just fresh. Like, I'm only, like, 5 months, like, 26 days.
And do you
days.
count yeah. Oh, so you count days. Oh, yeah. So did you count days off of alcohol and then?
I did, but then I kind of stopped after years, right? Like, after, I think I probably got to about 2 years, and then it really became, and this is, I don't mean to sound like, I don't want to offend anyone or trigger anyone, but it became very easy after 2 years.
Yeah.
For me, it was just like,
that's okay.
Booze just stopped.
Yeah.
I just, and like I said before, like, I just know that I'm never going to drink again. But pot is, I will tell you this, I find pot more difficult. I really do. Because it was so much easier to hide. But I thought, like, I felt like, you know, you couldn't drink all day and not have anyone notice. Like,
right.
But pot.
Yeah.
You know, I lived my whole life. And, you know, most people, I mean, you know, my closest friends knew that that's how I functioned, but not everybody else didn't.
Yeah.
Nobody else didn't. You know, you spray your hair, you put eye drops in, and you go on.
Yeah.
You know, and so that to me is, it's really hard. Like, I'm still in it. You know, I'm still really, I struggle and I'm weird and.
Yeah. I mean, so, and what about other drugs?
Oh, no, nothing. It's been only pot for probably a solid dozen years.
Do you crave pot?
Yeah.
Oh, God, how often?
Like, now it's getting a little better now. Like, it's going in shifts. Like, at the beginning, like, it'd be a punch in the stomach. Like, especially, I'm telling you, the week that I quit, I swear to you, the week that I quit pot, it was like everyone in the world, like, came out smoking. Like, it was just like, I mean, I was walking down the street and like literally a kid on a skateboard skated by me smoking.
Right. Right.
I was just like, I mean, I went to a couple meetings and it's like, it was beside a dispensary and you're like, are you kidding me?
Right.
Like, it's just, that's the, it's in the air. I get into an Uber. It smells like pot.
Always.
I
mean, it's just like LA though.
It is. It's sort of one of the smells of LA.
It really is. It's
avocado
bizarre.
And marijuana.
I know.
Yeah. So that was really at the beginning, was really hard, and there was a lot of times where I'd have to leave places, and you know, just because the smell, like, it was very much like that, just like you know, that like desperate, like a physical desire for it, like really, really. And you know, everyone, because I know you've heard this, a lot of people
say it's not addictive. Yeah. I know. What do you
think
of that?
They don't know what the fuck they're talking about. They don't know what they're talking about.
Right?
Yeah. And if you don't think. It's. I'm sorry. You're just so wrong. I think if you do anything to any extent, can become addictive and it's hard to stop.
Right.
But I mean, if you smoke a couple joints a week with your friends, fine. You're not addicted to it. But I mean, I smoked in a, you know, non, like, chain smoking type of way. You know. So it's addictive. Like, I mean, it's. Maybe it's not as physically addictive as everything else. Like, you don't get sick when you get off a pot.
But it's the mental.
Oh, God. But you feel it. You feel it coming out of your body.
Yeah.
Like, at the beginning, first couple of weeks, I couldn't sleep enough. Like,
yeah.
I just could not sleep enough. Like, I was sleeping 14 hours a day.
Yeah.
And then I shifted into terrible dreams. I had terror dreams.
Wow.
Because, you know, when you smoke as that much, you don't dream. There's no dreaming.
I didn't know that.
None at all. Anybody that if you go off a pot for a couple of days, you dream like crazy. And it was terror dreams. Like, waking up in the middle of the night, like, Like really scared.
Like of people chasing you, murderers, monsters.
Chasing, about just like just evil, like just bad things happening, death, and just and like just spooky, scary images that, you know, from whatever the depths of your soul that you avoid.
Right.
Yeah, awful. Like really nightmares. And then using dreams, of course.
Yep.
You know, and waking up and hoping that it's not true, and then it's not true, and going, okay, good. The dreams have lessened now, mm-hmm. though. I still dream a lot, but mm-hmm. they're not terrifying. Yeah.
Okay, but once you got through the horror dreams, yeah. what isn't it kind of nice to dream again?
No, it sort of is.
Yeah.
And like to remember them.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
look at this. This is crazy to me. Honestly, last week I had dreams last week that they were continuation dreams from dreams that I had 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. So after I quit pot, isn't it? Okay, seriously.
Okay.
In one day, in one night, I had a dream that it was a scary dream that I had had mm-hmm. At the beginning. And it was my best friend was in it, and she had posed a like a riddle to me mm-hmm. that was, you know, life or death situation. You know, this is it. If you can't answer this, you know, we're all going to die. And in the dream, I couldn't answer it. This dream, even in the dream, I had a moment where I was like, this is the dream. It's the same dream. It's a continue. Is it? Are we good? And then she posed the, and I got it immediately. Wow. And I answered it immediately. And in my dream, my best friend was like, do you see how much you've grown? And that was, and I woke up and was like, what the hell? And then the same thing. And then the next day I had another dream uh-huh. where I knew it was the same dream being chased. And I was with a bunch of people. We were being chased by killers. And in the dream, I was like, look, I've been here before. I know how to get us out. And I got us all out. I mean, it was, wow. I woke up and was like, okay, that's.
So you think it's your subconscious being like, this is why it's so good that you're sober.
Maybe. Who knows? Maybe it's like. Maybe it's leading me to saying, you know, you're making the right decisions.
Right.
You know, I don't
Our
know.
Our subconsciouses are so Weird, smart. They're so
way smarter than us.
Smart.
Way smarter than
I know.
Us. Yeah. And, you know, it's right now, like, I keep having moments where, you know, I say to my therapist, I don't know if quitting marijuana is making my life better or worse. But I know, honestly,
Tell me more about
there are
that.
Moments where I'm just like, it feels worse because... I also have a problem with food. I'm mm-hmm. sorry, listeners, but I do. I am just an addict at heart.
But not smoking make you, didn't smoking pot make you eat more?
Yes, but now
I you feel don't like have another numbing for your
and
feelings.
And I need it. And that's where I'm going through that, like, I'm glad you said that because no one has ever been able to answer that immediately.
What?
That's, you understand. Like that, oh,
Jesus, so sorry.
That
I think
that
I was
our subconscious.
I was so excited that you said I was like saying something smart that I had to knock everything over.
But that's what it is. It's like there yeah. are moments where it's just like, I need it. I need something.
Something.
And I don't, and I still don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Everything bores me.
Yeah.
Nothing satisfies
yeah.
me. And it's just like, ugh, and you can't, it's a scratch you cannot reach. And it's just, and so now, right now, I'm really struggling with food.
Yeah.
And of course, food is really hard one because we still
it's
have to eat.
It's constantly available and
oh
you
God.
Need it.
And you have to eat it.
You have to eat
like,
it.
Like, thank God, booze, I just leave and never drink again.
I know.
But now it's like, so now that's another one to overcome. You know?
I know. So yeah. tell me about this. So if you're saying like, I constantly feel bored.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of like putting something in us that's yeah. going to change us is
yes.
going to take alleviate that boredom
yeah.
for a second.
Yes.
And then it brings on despair.
Yes, absolutely. And that was the thing too. Like right before, because I've been trying to quit marijuana for about 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go to say to my best friend, this is it. I'm done. And she'd be like, yep, okay. I got it. I'm with you, Deborah. And then it would fizzle.
Mm-hmm.
But this year, like this, because I quit on January 4th mm-hmm. this year. And over the Christmas holidays, I had overwhelming feelings of boredom. Like where I would literally be smoking and just look, stop
yeah.
and go, what am I doing?
Right.
What am I doing? Like, it wasn't giving it to me. Like, it wasn't.
Right.
Ugh,
which
know?
I think is the thing. It's like yeah. the part when you quit is when you're like, wait, this doesn't
yeah,
work.
It's not,
turned
it's
on me.
It's turned. That's exactly
yeah.
it. Like, it just, and you know, have to smoke so much.
Mm-hmm.
And just,
it still doesn't work.
And it still doesn't work. And it
yeah.
wasn't getting there.
Yeah.
And I know it sounds weird, but it's just, you understand. You know what I mean? It's
I
just,
do.
You can't.
But I also understand this bored thing.
Yeah.
It's kind of a new thing I'm
yeah.
going through, which is weird and
yeah.
interesting because I'm sober a long time and I'm bored all the time. I was sharing about it in a meeting this morning.
Yeah.
Bored all the time, even when I'm entertained.
Oh, God, I know.
And I'm just kind of like, everything I'm doing, I'm just kind
I know.
Of like, eh,
I know.
When
I know.
Will this,
oh,
like,
God,
and then I,
know. I
beat myself up because I'm like, you're not enjoying the moment. Your
yeah,
life is
yeah,
passing
yeah,
in front of you. Do
yeah.
you have that?
Oh, my God. it's scary, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because like, then you start thinking, like, am I crazy? What's wrong with me?
Yeah.
Like, I can't, you know, we'd say, what would you do when I would get high? Like, I can't watch television right now. Like,
okay.
TV doesn't interest me. Yeah. I can't do it because that's what it was. I would smoke and just power watch TV and go through Netflix. And just
so it's a trigger to do it?
It's not even just a trigger. Like, it just doesn't
You don't
want to
do it.
For me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I can watch maximum an hour of television.
Yeah, but that's then, good.
Which
it's
is
bad
good.
For us
know,
to watch
exactly.
more.
So I'm like, that's not bad.
Yeah.
And then, like, at the beginning, I read.
Yeah.
So I would read. I think I read, like, in like the first 2 months, I read, like, 12 books.
Mm-hmm.
And now,
that's not doing it for
reading
you either.
Is slipping from me now.
Yeah,
now
yeah,
it's
yeah.
kind of a little like, okay, I can't find anything I want to read. So that's kind of moving. Then I got adult, you know, I got coloring books. With
oh, that's like a new thing, huh?
And I was just like, okay, I'll go. No, okay, no. It's just,
it's hard.
Yeah, you know, I was like, all right, I'll I'm gonna hang stuff in my apartment.
Yeah,
I'm gonna jazz my apartment. Did that, and now I'm just like, okay,
need a new project.
You know what I mean?
So I do. I really do. So what? So you're just kind of seeking different things.
Yes. Yeah. And now, unfortunately, and that's why it's like food. I mean, food's always been a problem, but food is, it's really ramped up now. And I have to pull it back on that. And I have to find something else. I can't let food. You know, I've got to.
So do you go? Control. Do you go to a program, or do you want to?
I would
do
like think... to actually be. To be honest.
Yeah.
Because, God, a beautiful quote. Where did I hear it? I wish I could tell you who said it, but a beautiful quote that addiction isn't about, the success of addiction isn't about sobriety, it's about community. Like, I'm totally messing that up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's,
maybe I do know it.
Yeah,
you've just maligned
just
it so
totally
much.
Totally fucked it up. But I feel that, though. It's like just being, like, right now being sober is great, but it's I need more than that, I think.
Yeah.
So I do think I need to be with like-minded people.
But you haven't done it at all?
I've done a little. Uh-huh. I did, at the very beginning of quitting pot, I did MA.
Yeah.
Which, there's not a ton of meetings of Marijuana Anonymous, so I did do that for a bit. At the beginning, I did go to AA in Toronto, but that was a couple years again. And, like, again, I mean, I feel guilty for saying that, but it's just, I don't anymore because I haven't needed to.
Yeah.
And that's whatever.
But what about what you just said about community?
Well, this is the thing. And that's where I'm realizing, you don't need it, Deborah?
I know.
Sure?
So
you
like,
sure?
like yeah. I mean, because that's the thing is people say like, oh, I don't need to go to those meetings. It's like.
That's almost when you should go.
Well,
when
you think I mean, you don't it's need like, to. You don't need to, but maybe you'll feel better.
Yeah. I think so as well. And I think just because it's right now, it's like I'm stripping away everything.
Yeah.
Like I feel like it's kind of like there's a little part of my brain that kind of goes, watch what you're doing here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Because
like, I'm just taking away everything.
Yeah.
And who do I think I am that it's going to be, you know, once you start getting cocky,
yeah.
it's dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, that's a dangerous time. I did another one that I had tried to, and this is, you know, with full respect, the Overeaters Anonymous.
Yeah.
I tried to go into that, but. Wow, I wanted that too. I wanted that so bad. I was just like, I'm gonna work this out. It's gonna be the same thing. Everyone's gonna be on the same page. And I went in, and it was nobody like me. Nobody.
Interesting.
It's you know, Overeaters Anonymous, and God bless, because it's the same thing. Addiction is addiction is addiction, but it's anorexics.
Yeah.
And you know, oddly enough, one of my eldest sister's anorexic. So, and I will tell the people listening, I am the opposite of anorexic. She is as thin as I am big, and it's just
different. So it's like it's, inverse. It's,
yes, and I gotta tell you, we don't communicate with each other at all.
About that, or in general?
In general,
this is the older sister that got you drinking because she was so cool.
Yep, and it is. I think it's a fear.
Yeah.
Like, I really do. Like, I think her, you know, struggling with anorexia, I think that in her mind, if she stops, you know, her, what she does, she'll turn into me.
Right.
And I see, I get it. I understand it too.
Yeah.
But so that's weird. So that's why I find like going into these and, you know, maybe I need to try different locations for this meeting.
Right.
You know, because not having anyone that looked like me or was in the same boat. I mean, and not even people that were in recovery that have, you know, become healthy and slim.
Yeah.
No, it was, you know, people saying their biggest, you know, they lost 20 pounds and it was kind of like, you know, I need like, you know, 100 pounds kind of thing. So that, and I have to tell you, it didn't make me feel welcome.
Yeah.
I felt like no one wanted to talk to me. No one would sit beside me. It felt very, I felt
Alienated.
And lonely.
Okay. Here's the thing.
Maybe that's me. Maybe I have to fight through it.
Well, okay. I have some thoughts that I'll share like once we stop recording, because I know a little bit about this, but not like my mom's. But anyway, I will say when I went originally to program, I was like, nobody's talking to me.
Yeah.
Nobody cares. Yeah, all you hear about is helping the newcomer. No one's helping me. And looking back, I was the one with her arms folded. You know, kind of like, why isn't anyone coming to me? Like, I was so, you know, so I, and now that I'm sober a long time, I see my perspective is so off. And I'm constantly making up stories about people not liking me when, like, they're not thinking about me at all, or they do like me, you know? So I do get it, but the brain,
The brain is tricky.
The brain is really tricky, you know? It just makes up stuff. You know, we got a left brain that's just going and going and going and making up stories, you know?
Now, can I ask you this?
Yeah.
Do you think any meeting, do you think it matters? Like, because I often, you know, I say to my therapist right now, like, can I go back to AA even though I really want to, I'm working on food right now?
I mean, I think that, and I am no expert, you know, I think that like a meeting is a meeting and it'll help.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you want help with a specific
thing, go there.
It's
here. Because it's here, it's available,
and
here.
There's a lot of meetings, you know. And
I know California is the place to be. I'm sorry.
I mean, for recovery, it's a great place, you know. So, but you know, I think that there's all sorts. So you just try different ones.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, look, I don't feel like going to meetings a lot, and I go anyway.
Because that's how it's supposed to. I know.
Yeah, because it's like
we don't feel like it.
I don't feel like it, and then like you know, it's I kind of try to go if I feel like it or not, and that's kind of weird. To, but I guess there's all sorts of stuff in life we don't want to do that we do,
of course,
right?
Yeah.
So okay, but I did want to get into comedy because you're wildly successful, and everybody should know. And we, but clearly you became wildly successful while still smoking pot.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how is that different now?
Oh, I was so scared. You know, it was so scared. You know, like you have that moment of like, is this my secret? Like, if I'm sober, will I not be funny anymore?
Yeah.
Well, I can gladly tell you, everyone, not changed a thing.
Good,
the
you're
only
still
thing,
hilarious.
No, it's I'm still hysterical. But the one thing that is much nicer is that I don't cancel as much as I used to.
Yeah.
Before it would be like, ugh, don't feel like going, and would just blow it off, or you know, or leave immediately after. And now I'm much more apt to hang out, and
even though people are drinking after.
Yeah, you know what? It's that. That's only because it's been so long.
For
the booze. That's the only reason. If this was like, you know, honestly, like if this, and you know what? Is it weird that I think there's something about, you know, wanting to go home and smoke marijuana almost saved me from being, you know, hanging in bars.
Yeah.
That was sort of taken away from me because I was such a pothead. That's a ridiculous thing to say. But
it's
it really did save me from that.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like.
I remember my mother saying that, like, how are you going to do this? Like,
oh, so your mom knows the whole deal.
They never knew about the drugs, to be honest.
She knows about the pot.
But they knew about the booze, but not about drugs.
Okay, yeah.
Because that was like, it's just that one was a little too, I don't know.
Parents are.
I will tell them,
you know,
when I have enough sobriety under my belt with
you
pot.
Can play this for them.
Yeah, exactly. But the booze was the thing. And that's what, you know, just like, are you going to, because my mother's father was an alcoholic as well. And he only found sobriety in like the last 10 years of his life. And so she, you know, how are you going to do this? You work at bars.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a big thing. But.
Well, you know, I've had more comedians on this podcast than any other because there are so many sober ones.
God, yeah. I know. Are there really?
Yes.
That's good to hear.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I kind of, you know, I find it's like, it's weird because I find out about it at shows.
Right.
And at, you know, on Twitter.
Yeah,
I swear to God. Like,
they'll be like 10 years.
Yes, comics will come out and they'll celebrate a milestone. And it's just like, oh, you know what I mean? And then it's, you kind of have that instant like, oh, there's another one. There's another one that I can, you know, reach out to. Yeah, that's huge.
Well, so, and so comedy wise, what are you doing? You did last Comic Standing is how they pronounce it. And you tour all over.
Yeah,
what else are you doing?
I am, I've only been in Los Angeles for 3 years now. So that has been, it's really the move, because I've been doing comedy 16 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so the move from Canada to Los Angeles, you know, at the time I was like, oh, this is going to be great. Starting over is going to be great.
Mm.
Wow. Starting over is super hard.
Super hard.
So it really is. So I'm still just trying to find footing in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm lucky because I feel welcome.
Mm-hmm.
And that's I'm so pleased with that. Mm-hmm. So really, it's kind of like, it's just more of that, like going out every night and going to shows and, you know, being a part of the community. I'd love to get a gig of some sort. I mm-hmm. might try. I've never had a writing gig, mm-hmm. and I would love to try my hand at that. Mm-hmm. In Canada, I was very fortunate that what most of the work that I did was just like, you know, Deborah being Deborah mm-hmm. on shows. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, that's what every comic wants. Mm-hmm. We really just want to be ourselves. Mm-hmm. That's what we're going for. But here I realize that it's, you know, it's not, stand-up is not enough. Mm-hmm. And I really think I'm gonna look into other, you know, opportunities that I didn't think about in Canada. Not that this is not saying they're gonna happen, but I can still kind of, you know, learn and go for it. Like, I think really now it's like, I'm especially sober. I need more to do, you know what I mean? I need to fill my time more. Mm-hmm. So before, I don't think I ever wanted sort mm-hmm. of a day gig, if mm-hmm. you will, mm-hmm. writing for something. Mm-hmm. I never wanted to do that, but now I do.
So like staff writing for a TV show, oh God, kind of would, a thing?
Yeah, anything like that. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm gonna start gonna expand pursuing my horizons a little bit.
Well, good. Yeah. I feel like that's a good note to end on.
I think so too.
Is yeah. there anything expand else? Horizons. Expand horizons in sobriety. Is there anything else you want to impart to listeners or tell people where they can find you or say something super wise?
You can find me at my full name. It's Deborah DiGiovanni. I don't know why I did my full name. It's huge.
It's so
but Deborah,
hard to
spell. I know. But Deborah DG, you can also find me on Instagram and my website. But really, if one thing that we just kind of touched on at the end there, the fear of losing who you are mm-hmm, sober mm-hmm. is such bullshit. It just reveals who you are way more. Way more. And guess what, guys? If you're a good singer when you're drunk, you're going to be a better singer sober. It just is.
I remember sitting in rehab and being so scared to write.
Oh, God,
Well, I thought it was going to be just really triggering because I used to do coke while I wrote. But you know, musicians, you hear people say this all the time.
It is there. If you've got it, you've got it.
Yeah.
That's it.
And really, it was just tampering. Like, whatever lie you're telling yourself about how it's making you so much better and you can access your creativity. I know.
It's a lie. Your creativity is there. It's not waiting to be unlocked by any chemical at all. It's just, it's there. It's not going to go away, guys. It's really, really not. So
go write an opera.
Yeah.
And then sing it. All right. So that was Deborah DiGiovanni on After Party Pod. If you like this podcast, please go subscribe, rate, review on iTunes. Tell all your friends. If you want to email me, Anna@theafterpartygroup.com. I'll talk to you next time.